Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Anne Rashid. Anne Rashid has published poetry in Adagio Verse Quarterly, Lit Candles, Feminist Mentoring and the Text, and the Metro Times. She and her co-translator, Choi Pyong Song, recently received the 40th Modern Korean Literature Award in Poetry Translation, given by the Korean Times. She and Song have published translations in New Writing from Korea and have translations forthcoming in Serena. Rashid is an assistant professor of English at Carlo University. Hi, Anne. How are you?
Hi, Jan. I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. Good. It's great to have you. And you're going to start with some of your poems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This first one is called Telling It Like It Is. Now it's gone. The house across the way that was always there lays collapsed upon the ground, a pile of bricks and wood exposed to the air behind the tilted tree. The birds have all sung about its demise, the sparrows and the cardinals and even the beady-eyed grackles who are here to steal the other's eggs, like the men who stole the bricks right from the face of the house before leaving it an eyesore for weeks. Everything is greening up, alive as ever, around the massive pile of debris. And I am listening to Beethoven's sonatas mixed with all the birdsong, telling it like it is. This new view, these layers of exposure, have made our eyes skip over what it all means. We are left alone again to examine the rubble and all the space that remains. New Year's, Detroit, 2006. Here, the new year is marked by gunshots. A hailstorm of trigger fire echoes through the night. But there is also birdsong. Hours later, dawn arrives as peaceful as any other day until the wild chorus of sparrows descend from all directions to devour the sunflower seeds you scatter in the leaning pine. In a while, they too will disappear, like the bullets we never seem to find in the daylight. You know they exist, but some days you just can't hear their high chirping register. I see you sitting there, the morning of this new year, straining to hear their mad rush of song, shaking your head when it doesn't come. Empty structures. When there is nothing left of this city that you remember, write it down. Pick up the pieces of old Hudson's, the last department store on Woodward, the chandeliers that hung over the perfume counters, the intricate railings that took you from one level to the next. Think of the way your mother dressed you up to go there, the gloves and hats and top coats that held you together on snow-ridden days. Remember your grandmother's vanity, how she posed with each clever hat upon her permed head, the hours spent watching her try on shoes to give her a few more inches on the world. When the entire building implodes and the dust full of asbestos billows up and over the heads of the suburban spectators, think about the creation, nostalgia, and fabrication of mourning. It's true it stood empty for a decade, and everyone forgot it until its improper death, but what would your grandmother say now? We charge ahead beyond these empty structures, holding out our hands to catch the past falling down around us, scrambling in a frenzy to get it all down, commit each piece to memory, much like your grandmother in her shades of blue played sonata after sonata on her baby grand, the high society woman of the 20s, drifting from one piece to the next for all of old Detroit to hear. Now, after one building goes, another stands alone upon shadowy Woodward, leaving us to grieve on lonely corners, glorifying memory on out-of-tune pianos, making marks upon places that once were grand. Meditation on the radiator. Waiting for the heat to rise from the radiator is like waiting for the adagietto of Mahler's Fifth. It rises like a storm, then settles into a lull and rises again, chilling your backbone, pulling you down to the roots of your sadness, even if you're not sad. You're not committed to it at first until it drags you under. You sit on the radiator cold until it boils you and you have to get off before returning. Sort of like love, it either plucks at your strings or boils you dry, gripping you in a vice like music or heat, and then it lets go, and you have to figure out if you need it or not. A little Mahler for the mailman. This morning you give a little Mahler to the mailman, letting the adagietto trail down the stairs to the windy corridor where he clanks the metal lids before heading back to sun and wind and sparrow song. Even though the icicles regenerate every time he turns around, the sparrows have found a space between gutter and board to nudge and flutter, casting wing shadows on the dangling icicles, dangerous and beautiful in the same instant, much like this single strain of violin that cradles you and nearly rocks you back to slumber before it catches you nodding and awakens that spirit within with a sudden rise, as though you are wavering atop a huge abyss. But before you plunge headlong into it, it reminds you of the remainder of the day, chirping to you, along with the sparrows, to go collect the mail, do your dishes, and make some bread.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Anne Rashid, reading her work. You have an interesting split in your work between the natural world and a sense of the city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have Detroit, and then you have the birds. You know, it's almost like, you know, you could have a book called Gunshot and Birdsong. I mean, it's all there, and it's really interesting to hear that reflective voice traveling like that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think growing up in Detroit, it's that really informs who I am and who I am as a writer. And if you've ever been to Detroit, and I know you've been to Detroit, there's a mixture of things happening. There's a lot that is gone. There's a lot that's still standing that looks like it could be gone soon. And there's a lot of nature that's sort of taken over in places that are abandoned. And when I go back to the city, I think people don't think about Detroit that way, but there are all these places where nature sort of has taken over, and I'm really drawn to finding those places of beauty in a place that's been kind of abandoned and left behind and in a lot of people's minds and mm-hmm. memories, you know. I'm drawn to nature anyway, so I like the rural parts of a city, and it's interesting because I think Pittsburgh has parts of you know the landscape that look a lot like Detroit too.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you know the writer Barry Lopez, but he talks a lot about the wild places in cities
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
how stunned he was by how much. Wildlife is in Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm,
and I think
mm-hmm.
people were like, "What? What?"
Yeah, yeah.
But it's everywhere. But I think we just don't see it, don't talk about it enough here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad you're writing. Maybe we'll have some more Pittsburgh wildlife poems.
Probably. I'm on the verge of that. I think.
Are you? Good.
Mm-hmm.
And along with this, I guess it seems like there's this reflective voice in your work.
Mm-hmm.
That is very welcoming, but it's certainly not all pretty. You
mm-hmm.
know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
It seems like there's always this movement, you know, this rise and fall, this storm, and then this rise and this fall into sadness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It seems to happen quite a bit, and then it shows up in Mahler and in this classical music that finds its way into your work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is music important to you in the writing of your poems?
I think it has been over the years. Growing up, my dad always had classical music playing in the background. He was a DJ once for a classical music radio station. So,
oh, I didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. So he grew up quizzing us about Beethoven and Bach and Brahms. And yeah. So, but I've really fallen in love with Mahler over the years, so Mahler keeps coming back into my poems,
mm-hmm.
and I think when I listen to classical music, I mean, often I'm in a melancholy kind of place, and I think that comes through mm-hmm. in those poems too. So there's sort of a a sadness, you know, in some of those, that kind of lingers in those poems. Mm-hmm. But I also really love how classical music can rise and fall, and you can be in one place in one moment, and then all of a sudden you're in another. You know, it's very, very kind of transient, I guess. Mm-hmm. You're moving from one kind of emotion to the next very quickly, so it doesn't give you a chance to be too down in the dumps, because then it pulls you right back up sometimes, you know. I listen to a lot of different music, but classical music seems to be what keeps coming back in my writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that comes through in your poems, that sense of movement and not staying with the sadness too long. I mean, I feel like it's there, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but yet then you'll write a poem like, what is it, Mahler for the Mailman or something?
Yeah, Little Mahler for the Mailman.
And which is great. I mean, it seems like you transform transform moments of sadness and join all these influences in your poem. So we're never sure where it's going, which mm-hmm. I think is a great thing.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. Could you read more poems?
Sure. Illuminations. Just beyond these golden hills, the sun falls. There's a glow there that's always just beyond where you started from. And if you look closely at the dark outline of trees and the lightning sky reflected in this bus window, you can see your own shadow superimposed over the whole scene. If you follow it with your eyes, in time there will be no reflection. You may forget where you are going and where you have been. This sudden slippage of sun into shadow as you head north on I-81, away from all you ever were, might haunt you, leave you with only a wisp of memory, a line you cannot trace until the lonely moons rise. But perhaps you might round a bend on this rambling bus and head downhill right into the pink of the horizon. And maybe, just maybe, you will find yourself again, there, illuminated in the getting from here to there. La Gringa. Here, small horses run wild along fast-moving highways, and children play too close to narrow, winding roads. Dogs of myriad shapes and sizes trot along in smiling packs. Pelicans hover in the wind over the ocean before plunging in. Crabs scuttle across the road, dodging car wheels in the night. And I am La Gringa, walking these shores with her head turned toward sky, La turista who tries to capture the frigate bird's dark wings against the cloudless afternoon sky with her lens, who obviously doesn't belong, but feels like she does, like she has been here all along, ancient as the etched cave walls deep in the center of the island. Train ride. Sun flows through the boards of the old lean-to barn next to flat, furrowed Indiana land, connected by telephone pole after telephone pole. I am fading in and out of shadows of trees over snow-covered tracks. The silos hold nothing, and I wonder what used to be. I think we're nearing Gary soon, where the stacks rise up from polluted furnaces and the people dream of winning it big at the downtown casino. Soon after, we'll glide along the base of Lake Michigan, curving up towards Chicago. Maybe the sun will be gone then. Maybe I'll have drifted much further away. Shards of Glass. As the eerie first bars of Mahler's First blend into the echoing bark of the dog around the corner, I feel strangely abandoned. I am apart from this dark world which rambles by outside my window. Trees are rapidly transforming and losing their luster to ground. It is all so sudden. I think of my friend's ex-lover hanging by a rope in the basement of the house we all reveled in years ago. Somehow we were protected from the violence outside its doors. They covered their walls in French vanilla, baked chicken and roast in the oven, played Mahler in the sitting room. And somehow the danger of crack houses and shooting down the street was kept at bay. Now when I see these leaves dangle from their branches, I think of sorrow at the end of a short string. How hard the world must feel when you drop. How the shards of glass you pass by on the sidewalk can rush through the veins, straining against a tether, lingering for a moment on life. Resurrections. In the dream, we resurrected pieces of you. You were there, and then you weren't, and it seemed only about the body. I wandered away from fragments of bone into a dream about teaching on an open field. Some students were there, and some weren't, and I went in search of those lost in the forest, just as herds of deer came spilling onto the field. When I returned, I found my father and brother bloody, pierced by antlers, but breathing, alive, only a few red stains on their open shirts. When I woke, I thought, I've nearly lost them all, and I wasn't even there to rescue them, just like my absence when you needed me. I was off in the woods, wondering at the majesty of pine trees, reading poetry, forgetting all that sadness lurking around the corners of your eyes.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Anne Rashid. Anne, I wanted to ask you about your work translating. You're mm-hmm. working with Choi Pyong Song, translating some Korean poetry. Can you mm-hmm. tell us what you're up to?
Well, we've had a number of projects this past year, and we worked primarily with poetry, both South Korean and North Korean poets we've been translating. And the North Korean Translation Institute is commissioning us to do quite a few of these translations. Last year, we won this prize in translation of poetry, which has kind of inspired us to keep going with this collaboration. And he's a wonderful person to collaborate with. And we right now are actually working on translating two short stories that are fairly political in nature. One is from the 1960s and another one is from the 1940s. So I'm learning a lot about Korean history in this process. And Choi Pyong he does the first kind of rough translation from Korean to English, which is a really difficult thing to do. And then I work on, you know, working on the lines and making it sound a lot, hopefully, better and stronger mm-hmm. in English, or at least to the English speaker. Mm-hmm. So it's been a really nice project. I sort of fell into it, and it's possible. It sounds as though we have a couple book ideas in the making mm-hmm. right now.
Oh, that's
so
great.
I think this is going to just keep growing from now on.
So. Mm-hmm. Great. mm-hmm. Do you think this close work with translation has mm-hmm. has it affected your writing at all, and has any of that the content crept into your work?
That's a good question. It's interesting because we've been doing a range of translating, of different subject matter, but there are a lot of Korean poets who focus on nature and also kind of a spiritual Buddhist kind of mentality. And I really connect to those poems in particular. I've learned a lot about punctuation, actually, and line breaks from these writers. I think this Western mentality is more focused on commas and, you know, stopping the line with periods. And in a lot of those poems, that, you know, that isn't there. Mm-hmm. A dash might work as a pause instead. And so I've learned a lot about trying to hold back from wanting to, you know, put periods where maybe periods should not be, you know, implementing kind of this punctuation on a poem that doesn't need it.
Mm-hmm. And so like a more open feel to the movement.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's, you know, that might creep into my work at some point too. And I maybe don't even realize it, but mm-hmm. I know that that just thinking about word choice I've got a sharper eye for that now mm-hmm. In working on this project. So
that's great. Yeah, it's got to be a great exercise in discipline
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and focus.
Yes. Yeah. Which is hard with you know, so many other things happening. But I actually like having that to come home to and work on. Mm-hmm. It takes a long time to get through a translation. So
I bet.
So yeah.
Well, great. We'll look for that. And some of it is published in New Writing from Korea.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And mm-hmm. and forthcoming in Serena. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be available in the U.S. Right.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, could you read more poems?
Sure. Two Nickels. After a few glasses of wine, Grandma admits she used to tell tales to whoever sat next to her on the train. These were her career girl days in the 40s. She was carefree and adventurous before settling down with Grandpa. Once she told a man she was a prostitute. He was bound south and she was getting off in Indiana anyway, so she shook him up a little, knowing she'd never see him again. Another time, she went out to a fancy Swedish restaurant with an older man she met on a plane. Her mother would have killed her if she knew. It got a little scary because it was clear he had other intentions, but she got a free meal out of it and got out of there fast. In those days, you had to take what you could get, in between jobs, staying at the League of Catholic Women, dancing at the USO halls with soldiers bound for war. Some days she couldn't rub two nickels together, but she still managed to have a good time. It isn't enough. It isn't enough that moths have taken to sunlight after the deluge of past days. Mid-April and they flit and gather above the green footbridge in ecstatic flutterings, mocking the long winter. It isn't enough that the mottled branch drifts by me on the overflowed bank, stripped to the lightest bark, passing swift. It isn't enough to stand here alone, eyes closed to brilliant sun, whether that branch makes it or is pulled down by the undertow. It isn't enough for that dog at the far end of the river who keeps barking for more. He chases stones the owner tosses, darting after what has long fallen. I feel like the dog, wanting so much more from this life amid the flit of moths and sun. Even though I think I'm content with this moment, I want you back to hold me and tell me it will be okay no matter what. It isn't enough that you've given me worlds already. I still hold out here on this bridge with the barking dog telling me to keep on asking for more. Mantra. At the Detroit Public Library, the books of poetry lean crazy on the old wood shelves. A homeless man with a gleaming bald head chants a mantra, definitions from a dictionary at the end of a long table. His low voice travels like gravel through mud puddles. It keeps rumbling, not pausing for air, even when a fire alarm breaks into his steady stream. Outside, the spitty snow anoints those wading along slushy woodward. They raise their eyebrows and shake their heads, rubbing their hands and pacing in circles for warmth. A scruffy bearded man catches my eye and tells me he's heard from God that I have joy in my soul. He repeats it like an old psalm, reminding me to acknowledge the 21 angels around me, especially the one with the sword standing guard by my side. He eyes the space next to me on the wet street warily. You have so much protection, the Lord knows. Praise the Lord, can't no man or sickness get near you. You're on a path of wisdom, and this is your year. I'm telling you, can't nobody break that energy you have. Just remember the joy in your soul and that troop of angels hovering close. They'll do the work if you keep them in mind. I nod my head, promising to remember all the messages he tells me. Above him, angelic figures of Cicero, Plato, and Socrates span the marble wall, and within, the alarm keeps sounding, keeping all the knowing at bay. When the alarm ceases, I will wander back to the leaning shelves and homeless man's mantra with all the drive to find my religion in the language of poetry and the echoes of salvation that remain trapped within these walls.
That use of the word anointing in that poem made me think of, it seems that in a way your work is an anointing of the ordinary. And not in any inflated way, you know, but that somehow you're sort of pointing, the voice in the poems is sort of pointing us towards, look at this, this is all around you, and it has a lot of depth to it. I don't know if that's at all what you think the poems are doing or what you want the poems to do.
I I hope they're doing that. It's nice that you see that happening. I guess there's always something sacred in the ritual of writing poetry and in people watching and trying to find those things that speak to you and that you hope will speak to others. And so I guess I'm happy if that happens.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you don't set out to have some effect. You write what you need to write.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And hopefully it'll come out that way, I guess.
It is. It's working.
Yeah.
Clearly. So, yeah, we have time for another poem.
One night in late June, driving under overpasses peopled with waiting bodies, I move away from downtown before fireworks begin. Warren, Merrick, Milwaukee, West Grand, and on to Linwood. Kids on bikes, holding on to chain links, gaze at the skyline. They want to see it explode in light, spontaneous overflows of color taller than the Rensen. I get off at my exit before it begins, liberated in my recollection of how swiftly it goes, the ooh and ah, one night in late June, always heat heavy. It is the people I would watch anyway if I could stay. I drive on home to only the lonely before the echoes of light overtake the cloudy sky south. How swiftly it all goes, even still. Late summer, 2006. There are no pheasants here. The tire wheels have come off their axles and propel up the off-ramps of their own accord. We are left leaning to one side. There are bombs dropping in Lebanon. One after another explodes. There is nothing we can do. All we hear is screaming from the other side of the world.
It's the poetry of Anne Rashid. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jen.
Great. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.